with the microphone. Sensitive and all that goes with the baggage. All I want to share, all I want to share is love. All I want to share is love.
Nice moment of silence there on KFM, Grand Junction, Colorado. And this is Adam Cochran.
I'm Oakland.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were just going to introduce all of us. Rick Castellini.
And I'm Matt Kettlewell.
And that's our trademark start, which is never the same two shows in a row.
Yeah.
That's just the way we do it. So welcome to the Tech Guy Show today, the first show of February of 2013. Here on 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. You can give us a call tonight at 241-8801 extension 1. 241-8801 extension 1. And if you're out of the area, the area code is 970-241-8801 extension 1. And we got to do some things to get out of the way.
We got stuff to do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about stuff.
Since I'm yakking, I'll do mine.
That'd be the number four.
The numeral four. Yeah. All right, cool. All right, 241-8801, extension one. Should we pot up the first question?
Let's hear what's going on. Somebody's really been dying for us to do our show this week, I think.
Oh, good.
They're just waiting to call in. Hi, who's this?
Hey, I've been waiting for a long time.
I figured.
Just a real quick, I'm trying to do this as fast as I can. Okay, I am what you call a VIP, visually impaired person.
Okay.
My good eye on a good day is 2400. I don't know what 2020 is anymore, so I won't move. But,
hey, is your radio on by chance?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me punch it off.
Yeah, we need you to turn that off. We're getting a little feedback there.
There. Okay. I think we're back. I naturally have to use CCTV to read and write. However, my eyes have gone so bad that writing has become a no-no. Now, let's go back. My last experience with the computer is running an IBM System 36 mini mainframe.
Okay.
So I'm a little out of touch.
So what's your question for us, sir?
My question for you is there anything, any small unit with a screen and a keyboard that is available that we punch into a small printer so that I could write?
You said you're using the CCTV, but you're asking about a monitor. Can you, zooming and making the picture bigger? There's a word for that. Can you read a screen that's got a lot of good contrast and big letters?
Well, I run it all the way up as big as I can get it, mm-hmm. so that I can. For the most part, I can read like the newspaper.
Okay. Well, because my thought is that you could probably get just a real inexpensive desktop computer and just get the largest monitor that you can find. You can get, last weekend there was a 23-inch monitor on sale for $99 at one of the stores here in town. And you could blow that up pretty big and be able to use it along with a printer and your word processor, and that might work.
I do have one suggestion for you, and this isn't actually a technology suggestion. Maybe you're familiar with this. I don't know if you've worked at all with the Center for Independence. Have you ever worked with them at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I would see what suggestions they have, only because we're not experts in – we would know as far as how the technology works, but I think you're almost getting to the point where you need something like a JAWS or a program that's made more for giving you audio feedback as well as the video feedback. And there's a lot of great stuff out there, but it does take a little bit of training. It's not something where you can just install it and start using it. You do need somebody who's worked with it before.
I was thinking about calling the guys down at Tucson again and talking to them about their programs. But I just wondered if there was just a small thing. I didn't want to get into.
Well, you know, the nice part is most of the large, huge screen TVs today now have input for, you know, a regular laptop. So you could actually get a laptop and hook it up to a 60-inch screen if you wanted to. And that would present something very, very large that would work as well. So there are a lot of options out there, but I think what you need is somebody who is used to working with people in your situation so that they can make sure that they're meeting your needs. I wouldn't go out there and buy an $800 TV and then find out that it's just not going to do the trick. I think you need somebody to kind of help you out and assess your situation a little bit, because there's definitely tools out there that I'm not familiar with, and I think all of us have, we've all had a little bit of experience with JAWS and with setting up the accessibility features in a computer, but as far as what the latest and greatest technology is that's out there, we're probably not the right people to answer that question.
Okay, so what you're telling me is the only way I can go is to go into an actual computer and...
Yes, that's right. I mean, I don't think you're going to find anything that's going to meet your situation like an iPad or any kind of a tablet that's going to work well enough for you to do what you want to do.
Yeah, what I have to do is be able to type and I was never very good at...
Right. Well, there are of course, voice recognition programs and things like that, but you're still looking at a computer option to do it. Yeah.
Okay, well, that was the answer that I was looking for.
All right.
There ain't nothing smaller than that.
Not that I know of. No, I don't know. Again, that's what I said. I'd talk to the Center for Independence and other people who are expert on the topic and see if there is. But as far as I know, that's our best solution.
Yeah. Okay.
We appreciate the call. Have a good evening.
Hey, good to hear you guys on KAFM.
All right. Thanks much for the
call. Thank you. Have a good day. All right.
241-880. And we had a lot of feedback on that
call
for some reason.
We've had a lot of visually impaired, blind, usually totally blind in a lot of cases, people who we've worked with in the past. So we do have some experience, and it's amazing what you can do with a computer.
But you do need a computer.
You need the computer
part. I think he was looking for something inexpensive to hook to a monitor, and it's not going to work.
Now, another question I have for you guys, and maybe you guys know, but if they were to go down to Best Buy where they have the TVs and whatnot, do they have a situation where they could, you know, try that sort of a thing?
Oh, yeah. In most situations, all you need is the VGA port on a TV, and they could probably grab one of their laptops if you have a salesperson that's willing to work with you on it.
Right.
But then again, like he said, if he's looking for a $400 answer, I don't think that he's going to find that. I think he has to get a computer, hook it up to a TV. But again, I'm not an expert in it. I think there's so many people out there that work with accessibility options and options for people who are, you know, impaired in a number of ways to be able to help that.
Well, and I've been trying for years, and if anybody's out there listening, I've tried with all the local high schools for years to try to get together with a club from a high school.
Right.
I thought I had a little in with the Fruita High School Computer Club or Technology Club about 4 or 5 years ago. But this is a huge opportunity for folks who are running volunteer organizations. And I'm thinking mainly for high schoolers that would like to get some volunteer hours, would like to learn a little bit about technology and do some good for the community. And that would be to be able to grab computers, laptops or desktops that are older, that people are giving away or replacing.
Sure.
Put Linux on them.
Right.
And customize them for a gentleman like the gentleman who just called. He may just want just word processing.
Yeah.
And to be able to either give him a laptop or give him a laptop or a computer or give him an inexpensive desktop with a nice monitor and set it up customized for him with LibreOffice and everything maximized as far as the screen and everything. Now, but no one is taking
I don't
up
think
on
there's
it.
Enough.
Now, I'm sorry, now, go ahead. Oh, you know that Caprock Academy actually has required volunteer hours by students. Mm-hmm. And so we should probably hit them up and see to continue
You've
that.
You've got an in there.
I do have an in, and I will go talk to them.
I've talked to a lot of the computer folks around town, the computer teachers. And like I said, I did a little presentation about Linux in the high school in Fruita quite a few years ago. And no one has been willing to take that ball and run with it. And I'd love to help someone get off the ground and take that as a little community service.
In general, and I've thought this for a long time, ever since I ran my own computer business, I've thought that there aren't enough nonprofit organizations out there to help people with technology in general. I mean, just as much as, you know, where do you go to have all the phone numbers plugged into your cell phone or, you know, that just to use a device that you just bought or to hook up your Netflix account or something. I just think there's a lot of people in there that I think there's this gap in there that a nonprofit organization could really help out with.
Under or a volunteer.
Or volunteers that could help out in these situations. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, anyway, there we go.
Interesting.
241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. 241-8801, extension 1. We do have an interview today. I'm going to go back to my notes here. And the interview is going to be with a gentleman by the name of Dariush Derek Shawnee. I got to ask him his pronunciation when he gets on here. But he is a Maya expert, or Maya. We're going to have to ask him how to pronounce the name.
I've always heard it Maya, but maybe that's not what it is. But I've always thought that's what it was.
I thought so, too. But it's a software that is specifically made for 3D animation for both movies, regular, live action movies, as well as animated movies like Cars,
like Toy Story.
And he's been involved in this for quite a number of years, 12 to 13 years. He has degrees from USC and teaches out at USC in Southern California. And he's going to be joining us by phone at the top of the hour. But until then, feel free to call us, 241-8801, extension 1.
I think whether or not you're interested in 3D animation or not, I think this will be an interesting interview because it'll also show you what's possible in the world of education through stuff, because that's what he puts together is a lot of educational material on these programs. Like how much can you learn just by sitting in front of a computer and doing things that way?
So. Yep, very good. So we'll be joining him at the top. He'll be joining us at the top of the hour. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. 241-8801, extension 1. Well, Dell is going private.
Yeah.
They have sold.
Good
I think
for
it,
them.
I think they finally did it all yesterday.
Yeah.
They sold all their public shares to a private company, which is primarily owned by Michael Dell,
right?
Who is the founder of Dell 28 years ago, I think it was what I read.
Yep.
28 years. That's hard to believe. Dell is a company that's almost 30 years old.
And that's what put him through college, wasn't it?
Probably.
I think it was because he started out as like a computer hardware repair for people that just exploded on him.
Right. I think I heard that too. He did something in his dorm room, guys in the garages and dorm rooms.
Dell really benefited during the days of Gateway and Packard Bell and all of those because everybody else tried. Remember when they tried so hard to stay afloat and tried so hard to stay alive that they outsourced all of their tech support. And I think that was the biggest benefit that Dell had was Dell refused to do that for so long. I think now
they are they're overseas now too.
But
they had the 3-year warranty back in the day when it was a 1-year warranty,
right? Or 90 days.
But then they went to the 1-year also,
right?
So,
eventually they did change. But I think their holdout is really what gave them the edge for so long,
right?
But now Apple runs.
One of the private investors the companies that bought Dell, that rebought Dell to make it private, Microsoft, believe it or not, is one of the huge investors in remaking it private. Makes sense because Dell makes PC compatible, Microsoft compatible computers.
Sure.
But anyway, we'll talk about more of that in a minute. We've got another caller. Come on in.
Oh, there we go.
Hello. Welcome to the Tech Guy Show with Adam, Rick, and Matt. How can we help you?
Yeah, I got a question for you about my Apple MacBook Pro.
All right.
Bought it a year and a half ago. And now it had the Snow Leopard operating system on it. Now there's the...
Mountain Lions out there now.
Yeah. And, God, it took me forever to learn, go from a PC to a Mac, and I'm really comfortable with what I have going on. And so someone told me that I have to download that other because they're not going to be supporting the Snow Leopard.
Well, I wouldn't worry so much about whether or not they're supporting it or not. I mean, it's going to work fine. The thing is, I would be shocked if you even notice a difference between Snow Leopard and
Mountain Lion.
It's not a new interface. There's no, the changes are all kind of under the hood sort of things. And
so don't be afraid of it. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, don't be afraid of upgrading because you really won't notice a difference and really nothing. It'll work.
Questionnaire. Yeah. What?
But I'm gonna disagree
up on the interface. That's gonna, you know.
You're not gonna see anything different.
You won't see anything different. And he says he's gonna disagree. I probably agree.
Yeah,
actually.
I'm gonna disagree with Adam just a little bit because with the Apple world, when unlike Windows, with Windows computers, I tell folks as long as it's working for you, just keep using it. And there's a lot of third-party products you can make old Windows computers still kind of modern. On the Apple side of things, they make the upgrade only $20 because they want you to be with their most current generation of software. And things like Safari and like right now we have the whole Java thing with updates and whether or not it's safe and that kind of deal. Apple is much better about supporting their modern system than they are the older systems, as well as third-party software and hardware. A lot of times they will stop support for older operating systems as well. So my suggestion is don't get more than two operating systems behind with your Mac computer.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
And you're two behind at the moment, which is okay, but you wouldn't want to go a third one. And there'll probably be a third one out this summer.
I just bought this a year and a half, and I'm already two operating systems behind.
Well, you probably bought it at the tail end of the last one.
Right.
Yeah,
and then
I guess
they upgraded it. Yeah. So. And it's, like Rick said, it's only $20. It's just an upgrade.
I know,
so
that's reasonable enough.
Yeah.
But I guess my next question is can you guys see into the future and let me know how long this next operating system is?
They'll have another one out this summer.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
They bring one out every year. Generally, usually every 12 to 18 months. But again, like Adam mentioned, the great thing about Apple is they've had a new system, quote-unquote system, out almost every year, like clockwork, since 2002. However, if you started using their computer in 2002 and sit down at one today, they're almost identical. Unlike Microsoft, which is what you're scared of, because every time Microsoft comes out with a new system, they move everything, they rename everything, and it is a huge learning experience. But with Apple, it's just a very seamless upgrade. The upgrades, the things they add are usually just optional. And as Adam mentioned also, the things that are the most important are all under the hood and you won't notice.
Okay, well, great. Well, thanks so much. I guess I'll download it then. Yep. I'm ready.
All right.
Cool.
Hey, thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
To give you an example, like, for example, one thing he'd notice right away is if you have a folder full of documents and you keep that folder backed up someplace else on a flash drive or whatever, if you take that folder and copy it across and you're not sure which is the newer folder, it'll ask whether you want to merge the two folders together. That's something that's been in Windows since Windows XP, but they just recently added it to Mac OS X.
What did it used to do before? Just replace?
Oh, just replace it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's just one of those things where it's nothing with the interface at all. It's just something that's, you know, little change along the way.
And then the one thing you want to do with an Apple computer is do at least don't get more than two behind is they'll usually let you upgrade straight across within two versions.
Right.
But if you're three versions, then you got to get that intermediate.
Right.
Because I have a few customers that were on Leopard, which was the prior, and they had to upgrade to Snow Leopard, which is another $25 or $30 bucks. They charge a little extra. Then you had to go to the next mountain.
Yeah, it's best to keep up. For $20, it's best to just keep up with what's out there.
Yeah, and speaking of Apple, if you do have an older Apple laptop or desktop and you're only running like 2 gigs of RAM, probably a good idea to add 2 more gigs or more and get you up to a higher amount of RAM just to keep the thing running fresh, and it'll serve you really well for another 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
There you go. 241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1. Again, area code is 970. Or you can tweet Adam at Talking Digital.
Yep.
Me at Help Me Rick. Matt at Kettlewell.
Correct.
K-E-T-T-L-E-W-E-L-L.
Yep.
There we go. So are you guys taking a break from Facebook?
No?
No, I didn't see the – I saw the stats, though.
There's a lot of news this week about people taking breaks.
But they don't, really. I don't know if you know, the reports were more that people don't take breaks from Facebook. People don't leave Facebook for longer than 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
It was really interesting. And when they do leave, it's usually because their lives become busy doing other things in the real world, not because they're tired of Facebook or anything. So they take these breaks, but – it's interesting. There's been times in my life where I've been so busy that I just haven't even touched Facebook for a couple of weeks. But that's really the only reason I haven't checked Facebook.
Well, but I got a feeling that you guys have a lot more interaction than I do. But if you look at the people you follow and how often that they or your friends, and how often they're actually posting, what would you say the percentage of active users are of your followers? And people
I would
you
say
follow.
A quarter of them.
That's what I'm thinking. And I think that's what the statistics showed in some of these news stories.
Yep.
All right, take another
call. We've got another call. Hi, you're on with Rick and Adam and Matt. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hi, this is Darius Derek Shawnee calling.
Oh, hey, you're here. Excellent.
Welcome to the show.
How's it going?
We got you live on the air and everything. We'll get you an introduction here, a formal introduction.
But I'm going to have, can you repeat your name one more time? I've got your phonetic spelling, but I want to hear it.
Oh, no worries. It's Darius Derek Shawnee.
There we go. So you're pronouncing all those consonants. Darius Derek Shawnee. Very good. All right. Well, I'm going to since you're on with us, we gave you a little intro a few minutes ago, but now we're going to give you the full intro. This is from Darius's site, and his site, again, is is this your site, videotobrain.com, or do you just do help for them?
No, that's a partner I work with who produces some of the videos.
Okay.
My site itself is koosh3d.com.
KOOSH3D.com.
That's right.
Okay, very good. All right, so Darius is a VFX, video effects, and CG, which is
computer graphics?
Computer graphics.
Yep. Computer graphics supervisor in Los Angeles and is an award-winning CG generalist lighter. We're going to ask you what that means in a minute. He's an author of several, is it Maya? It's pronounced Maya, right, Darius?
That's correct.
Okay, Maya books.
You'd be amazed how many technology terms we only see written. We called voice over IP. We called it VoIP, VoIP. Things change over time, and sometimes we realize, we've never actually heard this word pronounced by somebody who actually knows what they're talking about. Great, go for it.
Now, Darius is also an animator and supervisor on many commercials and feature films. He's a member of the Visual Effects Society and has won a London Advertising Award for Commercial Effects. And he has won also the bronze plaque from the Columbus Film Festival and is a proud VES Awards nominee. He earned his BA degree from Lehigh University in Architecture and Theater, holds an MFA degree in Film, TV, and Computer Animation from USC, and he also teaches visual effects. He has taught for almost 12 years in Maya and other visual effects in UCLA Extension's Schools, Art Institute of California, and Gnomon. You'll have to tell me what that is. And he's also, as we mentioned, an author and a video trainer for videotobrain.com. And he's also on the adjunct faculty at Santa Monica College. Did I get almost all of those highlights there, Darius?
I think you did. You did, you did it very well. I appreciate that.
So now, as Adam mentioned at the top of the show, Darius is a specialty guy in computer graphics and in animation, and that goes way beyond what we do here on the show, but we all are fans of movies, fans of TV, and we've all been obviously on the enjoyment end of watching what animation and what computer graphics and CGI has done in the past 10 or so years, and you've been there almost since the beginning, right, Darius?
Well, the beginning goes way, way back, but I was certainly part of one of the surges in the industry about 15 or so years ago when things like Jurassic Park were coming out and CG and 3D graphics started becoming much, much more popular and prevalent in movies.
And now how long has Maya is a product from Autodesk, and Autodesk was acquired by Adobe, is that right?
No, Autodesk is its own entity. They've been around quite a while, and they've got a huge following in the architectural and engineering with CAD and AutoCAD fields.
Okay, but they're not associated with Adobe then.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, no, all right. For some reason, I thought I got this from them. Well, explain to us what Maya is and how long it's been around, Dariush.
Well, Maya's been around for about 11 or so years. It's a 3D package where you can create 3D animations and renderings, and is one of a few packages out there that are used in films, TVs, commercials, and games as well.
And if you and you can also create not only the animation, but you can also create 3D worlds that you can use for planning. From what I could see on the website, you could create 3D worlds. And in fact, looking at your video, where you could create these 3D worlds that you want to figure out, like maybe if you're planning a skyscraper, for example, and you wanted to put together a 3D world of how things would work in a 3D model. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I have quite a few architecture graduate students in my class at USC right now that are taking the course to learn the program to help visualize some of their designs. And Maya, along with 3ds Max, also owned by Autodesk, are two very big names in the AutoCAD and the architectural field as well as entertainment.
And so there's a crossover between those products for sure, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of the workflows with industrial design and entertainment design are pretty similar. They may not use the same exact software, but there's a lot of cross-pollination at the very least between a lot of the Adobe products are used constantly between the two industries as well, Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects, things like that. So there's actually quite a few tools used in the industries.
Very cool. Now, you wrote your first instructional book for Maya and for 3D modeling and animation. How long ago, Dariush?
I would say about 10 years ago now.
And what did someone ask you to write the book, or did you decide there wasn't enough good books for learning the trade, and you decided
exactly
to do it yourself?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I was getting a little frustrated. I had started teaching at the time, and I was getting a little frustrated that I couldn't find something that fit my particular way of teaching. So I decided to start writing it, and I contacted a few publishers. And Wiley, a great publisher based out of San Francisco, and their imprint, Cybex, called me up, and we've been working ever since. And we're about to go into the 10th edition of my Introducing Maya book.
That's awesome.
Well, very cool. Now,
thank you.
We've got a lot of... We're a college college community. We have a university, Colorado Mesa University. We have a lot of people in our community that are self-employed, that create their own businesses, things like that. And I know that this sort of field kind of gives people the freedom to be able to do things like this. Make money freelancing or working for somebody else on projects and things like that. Let's say that there's somebody out there listening that sees, 3D animation, they see all that you can do with a, fairly basic computer. How does somebody get started with this sort of thing? Of course, you've got your books and you have the tutorials that are available, but what are the first steps somebody needs to take if they think they might want to pursue this field?
I think once they decide that they want to pursue the field, there's just a huge community out there online with videos and with tutorials and also in the bookstores that will help them get a leg up. It's about identifying what exactly you want to do, what sort of animation or what sort of effect you want to pursue, and then figure out what tools are available to you and start, start small and start learning those tools toward your design goals.
Okay. This is something that people ask us for all the time. They call us up and they say, I want to buy a new computer and these are the things I want to do with it. What sort of investment are people, not looking at the software side of things, but just the computer itself, what kind of computer do people need in order to get started with doing this type of work?
Well, I'd say maybe 8 or 9 years ago, this would be a very different answer.
Sure.
Right now, you can pretty much start on your run-of-the-mill, everyday, household laptop. If you want a very serious system, if you're looking at studying it or being a professional in it, you want to concentrate on a good CPU speed, a very solid motherboard, a good amount of RAM, and a good high-end graphics card. And I always recommend either the Quadro cards from NVIDIA or ATI Fire Pro cards.
They're okay.
Professional grade, and they have, you know, prosumer grade.
Sure.
Cards as well to fit all sorts of different budgets.
And those are the people who, once they get into it and kind of understand the software a little bit and decide they want to get serious with it, that's the sort of thing they'd be looking at.
And we're talking with Dariush Derakhshani, who is a instructor and an author and a video. How long have you been doing the video tutorials, Dariush?
I've actually just started the video tutorials within the past year. I've been mostly just concentrating on publishing and teaching live courses, but you know, the online contingent in education has grown so much that when an old friend of mine approached me about doing a video for Video to Brain, I just couldn't say no. And we've been working together for a little while. It's been a really great experience with the guys at Video to Brain.
Very cool. And you can find Dariush's links to his books and his training at his website, which is koosh3d.com, KOOSH3D.com. Dariush, so what is, you said your book is going into the 10th edition of Maya.
That's correct. We publish about once a year to keep up with the new editions of the software that are coming out. And I don't have any release dates quite yet, but we've started work on the next edition and should have it out in the next few to several months to coincide with the release of the next version of the software.
And what have you started putting together for videotobrain.com as far as the video tutorials? What kind of what software and how deep into it in terms of beginner, intermediate, advanced are you guys currently at VideoToBrain?
All right, on. Great question. VideoToBrain itself has a really wide range of videos, and they cover all sorts of things from AutoCAD to Illustrator and Photoshop. The 3D space is growing quite a bit with Video to Brain. I completed a series on Maya. It's an 8-hour video for absolute beginners or for people who know, you know, some graphics and want to switch over to Maya itself. So, and the videos are really short and they're very topical to a very specific workflows. So if there's something you're looking to brush up on or learn, you can go straight to that. You don't have to watch, you know, an entire 8-hour series. You can target exactly what you're looking for. Or if you're a casual user and you're just starting to learn, you can start at the beginning, go all the way to the end, and you'll know a good amount of everything that Maya has to offer. And I've also just completed with my wife a series on 3ds Max, and the first part of that series is out now. We'll start working on the second part. And that's for beginners and people who want to start modeling in 3ds Max, which, again, is another software from Autodesk.
Very good. And I noticed that on the Autodesk website for Maya, that it's available for Windows, PCs, and for Linux?
That's correct. It's available for OS X as well. It's across the board. Anybody who's got a computer, a keyboard, and a mouse can pretty much run it. And they have 30-day trials for downloads of the software, so you can get into it. And they have a very generous educational licensing as well. If you do a search in Google for that, for Autodesk Educational, you'll find you'll be able to get your hands on software in very reasonable ways.
Very cool. And what do you use a Mac or do you use a Windows? What do you use for when you're doing work with 3D and with Maya?
I typically use a PC. I have a home-built server that I created based on an Asus motherboard and an NVIDIA Quadro card. I use that quite a bit at home. And I have a MacBook Pro that I do a dual boot. And when I need to do a good amount of work, I boot into Windows and do some. It's a little bit more limited than the power server that I have at home, but it definitely gets the job done.
Very cool. Again, we're talking with Dariush Derakhshani, who is a 3D modeling and CG expert from California, and he is a instructor out there, and he also shares his knowledge through books he writes about Maya, which is a 3D software, and he also has recently started work with a company called VideoToBrain.com to create video tutorials on these topics as well. Well, Dariush, is there anything else that you want to bring up that we haven't asked you so far?
Well, in the beginning, you had mentioned that this type of work is usually beyond what you guys cover, and I thought that's pretty interesting because this type of work is coming to everybody's desktop pretty soon. I think the 3D way of communication and creating visualizations is going to become a part of the regular lexicon in the next generation.
So you think it's the desktop publishing of the past is now going to be 3D?
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. I'm finding students is younger than high school age starting to pick up Max and Maya and starting to be productive and actually putting out some really nice stuff.
Yeah. Well, I have one question. I guess one question that we're all can relate to, and it kind of piggybacks on what Adam mentioned earlier. But certainly we've all been part of, or at least heard of, the economy turn down in the last 4 or 5 years. But one area of the economy that keeps striving and keeps moving forward is 3D animation and modeling and film, in film, in commercials, and in TV.
Well, and even into print. I mean, creating actual devices, the fact that you can create something now in 3D with Autodesk and then print it out on your own little $5,000, which sounds like a lot today, but the price, of course, will come down. These 3D printers that will let you actually create devices.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can do your own prototyping. You can make your own sculptures. There's quite a bit you can do with that 3D language nowadays.
So it is definitely a growth potential. And like again, like Adam mentioned earlier, for kids or even adults that are looking to change gears a little bit, maybe have some of these skills or at least interests, this would be a certainly an area that most likely is going to have some growth potential in the future.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's quite a bit of decentralization happening in the entertainment industry where a lot of work is spreading throughout the country, not just focused in L.A., where most of the film business is. You know, there's lots of stuff moving all over the country. Louisiana has quite a burgeoning industry. Vancouver, Toronto, it's really quite global because everybody can communicate online, and you don't have to be in L.A. To be a part of a film anymore. So that's quite exciting to see.
Very cool. Right.
Cool.
Well, Dariush, anything else that you want to add before we bid you a good night?
Well, no, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. It's been great to be on the show.
Thank you very much.
Dariush, Derek Shawnee, and his website is Koosh3D, KOOSH3D.com. Dariush, thanks again for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye. Very good. That was very cool.
You know, if you go out there and you buy a new iPad, you spend the money and all that, and then you want to see what it's capable of. What can it really do?
Mm-hmm.
Go into the App Store, type in Autodesk, and download some of their free apps, and you'll be blown away at some of the stuff. I mean, that to me, those things, that's where an app crosses over between being entertainment and being something that's really useful and really astounding.
And a lot of them are free, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them are free. One of them that, maybe I should have brought this up with him on the phone, but one of them that my kids, love is called Autodesk 123D Sculpt.
Okay.
And if you just search 123, it'll come up in there. But it basically gives you all these different models, people, animals, dinosaurs, all of that. But then you just, through using your fingers and the tools they give you, you can alter the shapes of these different things. Or they just give you a big ball, a big mass or a square or whatever, and you can sculpt that mass into something else if you'd like. But it gives you that 3D, the realization of what you can do with 3D on something that hardly has any memory, you know, processing power to it compared to these big computers.
So it's like working with digital clay.
Yeah, it's very cool. There's another one called Tinkerbox that I really like with them, too, where you set up these little...
Is that Autodesk also?
Yeah, it's also Autodesk, and it's a kind of a Rube Goldberg sort of thing where they give you an objective and you just put balls in boxes and teeter-totters and all sorts of stuff up. But it's all based on a 3D... physics engine. So
it's
really cool. There's a lot of stuff in there. So yeah, just search Autodesk in the App Store and you'll find all kinds of fun stuff that you wouldn't even, you know, it'll just blow you away what you can do with them.
Well, wow. And like he mentioned, it is becoming more and more mainstream. If we would have thought 15 years ago that businesses would be making their own brochures, printing their own business cards and even creating their own forms for use internal in their business, that would have been unheard of probably 15-20 years ago.
Autodesk 123D Catch is in the App Store. I haven't played with this at all. Take photos with your iPhone or iPad and automatically turn them into 3D models. So there's some cool stuff you can do out there with them.
That's great. And there's the, well, you mentioned about 3D printers.
Yeah.
And they're down to $2,000
oh, yeah.
now.
Yeah, I know. I said the $5,000 because that's usually what people really want to get into it. But, yeah, you can get
there's a company in New York City. They were a Kickstarter company.
Yeah, it was a...
And they just opened.
Not working, but
they
yep.
just opened a retail store
mm-hmm.
where you can buy their 3D printer,
mm-hmm.
or you can go into their store and bring in something that you've modeled,
sure.
and print it in their store.
Right.
It's an actual retail store yeah. in New York City.
Now, what sort of things would somebody want to be printing out in 3D? I mean, the audience a
well, like replacement parts for toys. Adam kind of mentioned yep. that you could make maybe a chess. Maybe you want to design your own chess set. And you want to create a 3D model of your chess set?
Yep. A lot of times people will say, it would be great to have a tool. You know, I like my trowel. I like my whatever. This tool is great, but it's not quite what I need. And they alter the shit. You know, they create their own 3D model of what they need.
They have an idea in their head.
Yeah, they build a tool right there. And the nice part is with a 3D printer, of course, the dust that you buy costs different amounts depending on what it is. But you can use metal. You can use plastic. You can use clear
acrylics
and stuff like that, you know, anything in any shape. I know that if somebody wants to see it locally, the incubator has somebody who uses a 3D printer for some stuff. At least they
nice.
Did recently. So
wow.
you can kind of see what's available, but it's, you know, depending on the quality of the printer and all of that you get, you can get some incredibly intricate stuff. When I went to the, this is going to sound funny, but I went to the UAV convention, last year, the robot show that was in Denver.
Nice.
And they have companies there that produce the actual pieces that go into flying robots and jets and all of that, produce them out of metal, stainless steel, whatever, using 3D printers rather than machining the parts.
Printed robots.
Yeah. Well, at least the metal parts that go put them all together. And even somebody even printed out a pair of pliers, and it was moving and everything. All the parts were put together. It all created it. One half the pliers was red. The other half was blue. And just to show you that they just, in this dust, they just pull out this pair of pliers that they'd printed. So
wow.
It's pretty amazing what you can do with it.
Now these printers, I mean, how big of a part are we talking about?
They're big. I mean, we're looking at something that's probably 3 feet across, a foot and a half deep, a couple feet tall, which is
small.
Small compared to what we're looking at, yeah.
Right. right.
Yeah.
That's very,
smaller even than those laser etching machines that
remember
we
those?
Used to see all the time. And we still do, so.
Very good. All right, so we have about 15 more minutes left. And again, one more time, we'll thanks Dariush from koosh3d.com, KOOSH3D.com. We appreciate him joining us tonight from California. But if you have a question about anything technology-related, give us a call, 241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1, and we'll get you on there and we'll answer your questions. Now, we were talking right before Dariush called in about Facebook. And that's been a big things always seem to, I think with computerized news today and with the fact that everybody can get news, it seems people jump on a topic and then you see the topic everywhere. So it's not like people actually
right.
do research anymore.
Right, exactly.
One
they
person does
it.
Research and then everybody else reports it.
They do like a Google alerts on a topic
exactly.
and then they see what everybody says about it and then they create their own news story.
And if somebody has 25 comments on the story, then they're going to pick it up and put
exactly.
it on their stuff.
Trending.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually watched part of a TED talk that addressed that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That there's actually so much reuse of content and information that there is less and less originality
right.
that's happening.
Yep.
And
I think it's happening in education too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I was looking through TechCrunch, and
mm-hmm.
I just noticed some, I don't know, some would call alarming news.
Okay.
Mr. Lucas
mm-hmm.
sold his 2% shares for $2 billion. He's selling out of Disney. He's going away. So what does that mean for future Star Wars films?
You're late to the news on this, eh?
Am I?
Well, no,
yes.
he sold Star Wars, but now he's sold his
He sold
share
his shares.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
I
now,
knew about, yeah.
Now he's not even going to say what, you know, I don't know. I think that's more, I think we get into the geek stuff there, but at the same time, I think it, you know.
Does he have faith in Disney? Is
sure.
Or is he?
I think more people have faith in Disney than they have in George
right.
Lucas. That's what I think.
The true Star Wars fans didn't like the
yeah.
Prequels that he came out with, especially the first prequel,
right.
Star Wars Episode 1.
Yeah.
And so the really hardcore Star Wars fans
at this
from the
point,
70s.
What more can you do to ruin it? I mean, I think it's been that bad. So I think that's kind of where we're at. I do like that J.J. Abrams is doing the new Star Wars movies. I think that's kind of cool.
Oh, he is doing the new ones. Yeah. I didn't hear that.
Well, at least the first one.
I think I'm not a big science fiction fan, but...
I'm a big J.J. Abrams fan.
Yeah,
J.J.
Abrams.
Not science fiction necessarily.
But from Star Wars was such an iconic series in the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And did a lot with what was available technology-wise. And again, his story was pretty consistent
was
for the three.
Mm-hmm.
And then to come back and try to recreate that story 30 years later, I think it's kind of hard.
Well, there wasn't remake any, there's no magic left in things. I think what made the magic of Star Wars, again, goes back to the technology, not to the dazzling effects that we were able to take things that were... you know, a model that was the size of a dime and make us believe that it was, you know, this gigantic ship and things like that. I think that was a lot of the magic for the nerds. I think that was a lot of the magic of Star Wars.
Right.
Now the nerds are able to create their own movies on their computers and themselves.
Like we just
talked about. People can make a computer, make a movie at home that's just as dazzling as the original Star Wars.
Right.
So George Lucas isn't going to dazzle us with special effects, and you know, special effects aren't going to do it anymore.
Well, and I think the difference, though, that with Star Trek's been around since the 60s.
Yes.
But because of, again, I've watched maybe a total of 2 episodes of Star Trek in my entire life. But I know that's a bad
thing.
He's
told me that
geeks.
Before. Don't let him tell you how old he was when he saw Star Wars.
My kids were born.
Yeah.
But the fact I think that I've seen from the outside looking in at Star Trek is it's never had, it didn't have a core story like Star Wars.
Right.
And so it's been able to kind of leapfrog these generations and have its own identity.
And Star Trek is more fiction with science in it than it is. You know, that science, the emphasis isn't on the science, it's on the cultures and the things like that. You know, it's much more what we think of as being a, you know, good fiction more than, you know, good science. But it is interesting. But Star Wars was just all special effects.
To shift gears a little bit, and this is kind of to even piggyback on what we've been talking about, but is last night, and I meant to email you guys, but I found out about it late, YouTube, there was a YouTube documentary.
Uh-huh.
And it was a one night only at Carmike.
Oh.
There was only 8 of us there. 8 of us showed
man.
Up. But it was pretty cool. It was a YouTube documentary about, or what YouTube didn't finance it, but it was a documentary about people who have created careers for themselves by using YouTube and the power of making films in your house.
That is cool.
And it's used, what they really focused on were the video bloggers, or called bloggers.
Right.
And how they just got started in their apartments or their homes.
And you get people like Rhett and Link and Mystery Guitar Man and places like that. Yeah.
And they did Mystery Guitar. The two people that I recognized were Mystery Guitar Man and the Wheezy Waiter guy.
Yeah.
The guy at the beer.
Yep.
And then they had a couple of other people I didn't. Well, one guy, I guess, Dan Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's another guy that's been out there
for
a while. But it was very cool. It was very well done. Mark Green, who is an author and a technologist. Him and his brother they're called the Vlog Brothers, and very popular.
Oh yeah, they're huge,
and very good. They do some good stuff.
Yeah,
but he was actually one of the financiers for the documentary.
Cool,
but it's very
cool. Is the documentary going to be posted anywhere on YouTube, or do
we know
where it's
going? March.
Okay,
at the end of March. Because what
That's
it showed
right.
at the end, at the beginning, the director told us, you know, via the theater there. That this was when he told us to stay tuned to the end for a special announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the movie, he said, you didn't watch the final version. He said, because the final version is going to have someone in the audience in the final version, because he wants people to submit their own YouTube videos to his website. And him and his staff are going to pick one of them to put in the final cut of the movie. And
well, it's good that there are only 8 people there then.
Yeah. but it was shot all over the US.
Right, I understand. Yeah. Or nationwide.
But I got to think of the name. It was called Subscribe Me or Subscribe Now. Maybe it was Subscribe Now.
Okay.
Something like that.
How is it you heard about it? I mean, it didn't sound like it got out very much.
Well, because I went to a movie on Sunday.
Right.
And it had a preview.
Now, see, this is one thing that a lot of people don't realize with technology now. If you go see a movie, pay careful attention to all these little, I don't know what you'd call them, lobby cards and things like that are all over, because there's all sorts of stuff happening in the theaters that people don't realize. I mean, you can, operas at the Met or whatever are being broadcast live now. Since the theaters are digital, they're showing live
performances of various Broadway plays and, and of lectures that are going on. And there's so much happening now. Film festivals and things like that are now broadcasting to theaters all over the country at Carmike and especially at Regal. But these are happening. So I think there's a lot of stuff that we're missing out on because there's not a place that we can really find that other than unless we're walking into the theater and looking to see what's going on.
But this was a one night only.
Wow.
And I thought Adam might have seen it maybe through Joel or something.
No, if I would have seen it, I probably would have been there,
I know. I meant to call you guys.
Joel would die to see that.
I haven't been in a theater in 10 years.
Really?
Well, really?
Wow. Well, and that's why Adam's saying... Well, that's why Adam's saying is that the theaters are now, to expand their audiences, are offering these live previews of... Or not live previews, but live performances from around the world. You can watch British theater right in your own home theater.
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of thing.
I guess a lot of these seminars that may go around, like these lectures maybe by Oprah or something like that are going on, a lot of times they'll be broadcast in the local theaters on the big screen. So and sometimes they're even audience participation sort of things too.
Wow, a lot has changed since I've been seeing a movie.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. They're trying to give people a reason to go back into the theater, and they don't want to fix their sound systems, and it's just cheaper to do that, I guess. I don't know.
Well, as we run out of time here, 241-8801 extension 1. We do have more time. If you have a question, give us a call, 241-8801 extension 1. Anything newsworthy that you guys have come across last
week? Had a new iPad come out yesterday.
Yeah, the 128 gigabyte.
Yeah, same
iPad. Kind of very quiet. Very quiet.
Very quiet. I really like it, though. I like the idea. I hope they do come out. I'll get a 128 gig iPad mini if they...
Would you really?
I would, yeah.
Now, what would you put on it?
Wi-Fi. I fill mine up with tons of apps, and it's not because I use tons of apps. It's because I also
try a lot of apps.
I also show a lot of people how to use the iPad for education, for journalism, for anything I'm teaching. And so by doing that, you know, I keep these apps on there all the time, even though I may only show them to somebody once a year, something like the Autodesk apps or something like that.
But you leave them on there.
It to teach, because I want to be able to have it there with me when somebody asks me, what's a good program? Like my kids love art. What's a good painting program?
Right.
And I like to be able to open it up and say, well, here's five that are really good. And
128 gigs worth of apps?
I have a 68. Well, the other thing, too, is I have a lot of movies on mine because my kids want to watch movies.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of those on there. And so, you know, I've got a 64 gig and it's a little over half full. But to have that 128 gig and be able to dump everything I love onto it, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Well, and I think what it's going to do, too, is Apple creeps into these things, and with a 128 gig iPad, there was an article I read just this week about how to, in fact, in the last few weeks, I saw two of these articles. One guy went out and he bought a little MacBook Air.
Right.
And he came home and he had a little bit of buyer's remorse because he paid $1,200 for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he started thinking about what did he need it for? And he took it back and got an iPad for less than half the price.
Right.
And then he bought a keyboard to go with it.
Yep.
And so his article was how to replace your MacBook with an iPad.
Right.
And one of the biggest hurdles has been storage.
Right.
I have a couple of clients who are new parents, and they take tons of videos and photos with their iPads.
That's another thing, too. Yeah.
And so just the storage of that kind of stuff can quickly overwhelm a 32 or 64 gigabyte machine. So what they're doing is as prices come down with flash memory, you're seeing that they're starting to push more of that to these mobile devices.
Right.
And laptops truly are on the way out unless you truly need a computer.
Photoshop, full version of Photoshop or Maya, you know, something like that. That's great. You need a laptop for that, but you don't for Word.
Right.
If you're just using Word and Office, and especially if Microsoft does release Office for iPad, a little bit later, we're going to see that.
Well, you don't
even need Word.
Exactly, and that's what I contend. If for most folks' needs, I did the little presentation for Darius today. I put that together on the iPad while I was sitting at a coffee shop with a client, and I emailed it off to you guys.
Yeah.
I didn't have to have a computer for
that.
I was able to use the tools that are available on an iPad.
Well, and even as far as the limited storage, you combine Google Drive or Dropbox or something like that with, especially Google Drive, and it amazes me. But you have that, you don't even need to have anything stored on your computer to do that.
That's right. So, It's getting in there. And so I saw a second story today. It's the same kind of thing. How to replace your laptop computer with an iPad.
Yeah.
And that's becoming a reality.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm still noticing is if you use a desktop app, for instance, Facebook, and then you try and use it on the mobile device, they don't have quite all the features on the mobile devices yet that you expect or need to use from the desktop. So I think there's still a few things, you know, if you're trying to go that route as well, that I don't think they're quite there, but they are really getting close.
Right. Right. And you got to always match up your needs with what you're using. Mm-hmm. But the other mobile device that I think is starting to pick up a little momentum is the Google Chromebook.
Yeah.
And the Chromebook is we've talked about this a little bit in the past. If you use Google Chrome to browse the web, it's just another browser. But Google created a whole operating system on a very customized Linux, very safe, very fast. Battery life on the laptops that are running this is out of this world. It's as good as an iPad, but it's in a laptop format where you have a small screen, a full keyboard, you got a touchpad, and it's a very accessible type of device for folks who don't want to spend a lot of money. You can get them for $199 to $399 and $249 probably being the nicest price point for that. And you can get laptops for $299 to $300 to $400, but they're not very good laptops.
Right.
And then you have to do with all, you have to deal with all the maintenance of a Windows. So the Chromebook, I think, is I don't know if it's going to be able to squeeze in on tablets.
Yeah.
But
on the iPad at least.
Yeah. But it's an interesting thing, and I am slowly, if I find the right type of customer that's willing to kind of expand their horizon a little bit by knowing that they don't need a computer. A Chromebook's a good option.
Right. Well, the Chromebook, you know, just in maybe in the next 5 years, it's not quite ready, but the browsers, especially Chrome itself, has been using technologies that will allow pre-compiled software to run inside the browser. So they're trying to get people to start writing real software like AutoCAD and Photoshop and things like that to run in the browser.
Right.
And once that can happen, then I think everything can push away from the desktop, your laptop, everything, and it will be able to be run from a tablet device.
Yep. Cool. I agree. Well, Adam, do you want to give us some outgoing music here? And we'll fade out, and we'll be back again in a couple weeks for more tech questions. And again, our thanks go out to Dariush for joining us at the top of the hour talking about Maya and 3D modeling. Have a great day.
Today, dwarfed by reality.